Welcome to the Andy Staples Show. I am Andy Staples, also known as Ari Wasserman's official calorie coordinator. He sends me photos of his food. I tell him how many calories it has. I don't know if I'm right or not, but Ari, they don't hit you with a cattle prod if you miss it by 50 or 100 calories on the old calorie counting app.
I know, but the entire point of the app is to tell you how you're doing from a week-to-week basis in your total calories. So if you're estimating wrong every day, then it's not right. Drives me crazy.
I disagree. The entire point of the app is so that when you pick up a bag of chips that has 290 calories, you go, you know, I'm not going to waste these 290 calories on these chips, which will just make me hungry again.
I just went to the McDonald's nutrition menu and I was like, how much McDonald's can I eat in 2,500 calories a day?
What did we wind up on?
You can get two meals. Like if you ate a Big Mac meal and a Filet-O-Fish meal, medium with a Diet Coke, you can eat both with 2,500 calories.
Who knew? That's.
Do you think if I ate a Big Mac and a fry for lunch and a Filet-O-Fish and a fry for dinner every day that I would lose weight?
Yes, especially if you were exercising.
I don't think that would be enough food, though. I think I would get hungry.
You would definitely get hungry. Now, if you ate the equivalent calories in, you know, lettuce, vegetables, lean meats, and whatnot,
it would be less satisfying.
No, it'd probably be more satisfying because you're not just hungry all the time. But no, I am going to publish a diet book. I don't know if folks know this. I'm all set. It's going to be 200 pages. The 100 left pages will say eat less. The 100 right pages will say exercise more. And that's the book.
Yeah.
It's so funny. I don't sell very well.
Well, I'm coming to see you in a few months, and my goal is to be much skinnier next time I see you.
This was the big news of our trip to Arizona, where we all met out there, the whole Athletic College Football staff. Ari, while we were eating entire pizzas, downloaded that calorie counting app that I've been using, and so we are going to be calorie buddies. Ari sent me a photo. That meal that your wife made for you tonight looked delicious. That was
she makes dinner every night and it's always delicious and it's always nutritionist.
So nutritional. Some beef with some mushrooms and then a little broccoli and a little rice and that.
So if there's onions and mushroom chopped up in the meat, mm-hmm. Do you even bother counting that, or is it just doesn't even matter because it's zero?
It's pretty negligible, but you could probably throw 20 or 25 calories on there if you wanted to.
Yeah. Okay. So my calorie app says that I should be eating 2,500 calories a day, and when I work out, I usually burn between 700 and 1,000. Which can add on to it.
Yes, that's right.
But I'm going to try my best to eat only good calories while doing it too.
There you go.
So,
try your best, but understand there will be days when you want to cheat. Like, for instance, last week when you and I were together eating pizza, I ate about a pizza and a half.
Well, it's the best pizza on the face of the earth. I took Andy to my favorite pizza place ever with the rest of the college football team, and we went to Spinato's Pizza in Phoenix, and I never really got an official score from you.
It was very good. I was very impressed. I liked the thin crust better than the mm-hmm. Sicilian, which unusual for me. Typically, I like the Sicilian better, but the thin crust was great. It just, you know, meshed well with the toppings and
how many people do you think downloaded the calorie counting app while eating 9,000 calories of pizza?
You and you.
Hey, what else would you expect from my messed up mind?
But Max Olson's in our little club too.
I know you guys look really skinny, so I'm in.
We're trying. Yeah, we're trying. Okay. Speaking of your messed up mind, that's what I wanted to delve into today. I had this thought over the weekend because I was watching I was watching the Sixers and the Heat, and I was watching James Harden shoot these 25-foot three-pointers where he just no regard for anything. And I mean, that's a heat check. That's what that is. It's a heat check. You check and see how hot you are. You might be on fire, as they said in the NBA Jam game. And you, with your takes, usually fairly hot. Me, not always so hot, but sometimes I come in pretty smoking. We got to do a heat check here. We're going to fire off our college football takes, and we're going to see just how hot we can get and how wrong we can be. Well, how wrong you can be. I'll probably be right. But I want to see, I want to get into Ari's mind. And then, so it's three college football takes, one non-college football take, and we will see, A, how wrong Ari can be, and B, which I said right after B, just how deep into his twisted mind we can get.
So I did this like the porridge. I did one hot, that's too hot. Oh, this one is that's like kind of cold and one that's just right, Goldilocks.
Okay.
And then my, I think that my non-football take, which, spoiler alert, I said to your face in public last week, and you seem to kind of agree with me, so I'm very curious to see how it goes on this podcast.
I don't even remember. I gotta, I'm trying to think of what it is.
I'm going to tease you. So you tell me where you want me to start, and I'll start. I'll get the ball rolling. Do you want me to go with the mild take? That might, I mean, I think, let me preface it this way. Mild is my flavor. I still think I might upset some people with all of them.
Okay.
So you want me to start scorching hot or do you want to build up?
Oh, let's build up. Let's go with your mildest take first, and then we'll go my mildest, and we will move through our levels of heat, our Scoville unit scale.
And I'm very curious how you're going to take this because I've always felt this way. I don't like watching football when there's shitty weather.
Well, okay.
I find
you
it
don't
less
like
entertaining.
Sitting in bad weather while watching.
No,
football.
If I'm in my living room, I enjoy it less.
You enjoy it less on the television. If the weather is bad outside your door or at the stadium?
At the stadium, if they're playing in like really rainy weather or very snowy weather.
I originally thought you were meaning when like it was raining outside your house.
Oh no, I don't even know how that would impact. Down or something. No, I don't like watching when they play in bad weather.
What? You would rather it be perfect conditions. You want a dome every time.
I just don't like watching teams when they can't, when they are hindered from playing their type of football.
I know what this is.
What is it?
The rain and the snow make stars matter less.
That's right. That's right. Oh. I don't like when, or if it's really windy out, I don't like when a team can't play to its full potential because of something out of their control.
So you didn't that, and this isn't a college football game, but that Bills-Patriots Monday night game where it was so windy and Belichick was like, Mac Jones, don't you dare throw. You didn't like that? That
I mean,
was
I like
awesome.
It. I like all football. I mean, I don't not like watching it.
But you but like
I
that
I would
less.
Much rather watch a game where both teams are playing at full potential. Like, I don't like watching the game that is just like, well, they can't throw the ball because it's a blizzard outside.
Yeah,
So which team's going to mess up less?
I love when Mother Nature throws a curveball or when someone throws a shoe, like the Florida LSU shoe game in 2020. The fog was so thick that you didn't know how anybody would make a kick, but Cade York did make a 50-yard kick.
But I also don't like when the stakes are high in them. Because if there's a season being decided by football game, and football game is changed because of something out of both teams' control, that stinks. So I don't know. I don't know if people agree with me or they think I'm an idiot. And some people are like screaming like that.
There are a portion of people who agree completely with you. There's a much bigger portion of people that are like me going, are you nuts?
And I can take it a step further.
Okay.
Because I am very pro expanded playoff games being in home stadiums. But I am afraid that those stadiums will be snowing really, really bad.
So you're like Gene Smith, where you just move it to Ford Field.
Yeah, let's just move. Let's move our game. No, I didn't understand that. And if you're a team that plays in cold weather, then obviously you want to have a warm weather team from the south come up and play in that environment. I get it. I just wouldn't want to watch it. I wouldn't want to watch a team going to Ohio Stadium that was like, if USC achieves nirvana and gets me my $1,000 from year in 3 years, and they're like the best team in the Pac-12 and they throw the ball all over the place and they have to go to Ohio Stadium and play in a blizzard and they lose, I would think that sucks.
So when it started snowing in the Michigan-Ohio State game, because I feel like HDTV, like I remember the first time I saw a high-definition picture and it was just like, wow. But then remember when ESPN did the big featured story on SportsCenter on the football team in Barrow, Alaska? That was the first time I ever saw snow in HD.
It looks pretty, yeah.
Snow in HD is amazing. So, like, when Michigan and Ohio State were playing last year and it started to snow, You were like, eh, I wish it would warm up a few degrees and the precipitation would move through.
No, because I don't think Ohio State lost because of the weather.
It made it harder to throw.
I think that they got their butts kicked on the line of scrimmage, and I think that happens sure indoors did. Too. They, so I've heard people say that the weather impacted that game. I don't think the weather was bad enough in that game to impact what I'm saying. I don't like when it's pouring down rain or it's impossible to throw the ball. Because I like skill position players.
I like that every once in a while. I like when weird stuff happens and the coaches, players have to figure it out. They have to figure out how to adapt. I feel like that's the kind of challenge.
I feel like watching people run in quicksand is less fun than watching them run at full strength.
Oh, but watching them hydroplane like 8 yards at the end of a play is amazing.
Yeah. So you're not with me on that?
No, I am not with you. And I don't think most of society is with you on that. No, I think most of society is like snow game. Hell yeah. Rain game. Let's go. Mud game. Do it.
Yeah.
That's what most of society is like.
And maybe I'm weird, but I just like watching really talented athletes athlete.
You're going to hate this one.
Okay.
You ready?
Did you do yours like mild or yours all scorching?
This is the mildest of the three. The final one is a recruiting take, and it is scorching.
I can't wait because I don't have any recruiting takes, believe it or not.
Yeah, it's probably wrong, but it is scorching.
Okay.
Number one, Rich Strike winning the Kentucky Derby is the equivalent of Austin Peay beating Alabama this November.
It's probably worse.
You think so?
I mean, it's not 80 to 1. I mean, 80 to 1 is not, I don't think Austin Peay would be 80 to 1. Like those odds mathematically. I mean, a lot of times those games aren't even on the board for a money line, but it might be like 17 to 1 or 20 to 1.
Wow.
I mean, 80 to 1 is staggering, dude. Like that. I don't know anything about horse racing, and I don't know how to compute that from a football standpoint. Like I like what you did there, but I don't know enough about horse racing to know what makes a horse an 80 to 1 dog.
It was in the most distant post position. So it actually had to run farther than anyone else. It found out that the horse was informed. The entire group was informed that the horse was running in the Kentucky Derby on Friday.
And the jockey has never done it before or something, right?
The jockey rode 6 races in Cincinnati the day before.
So what's more insane about that? Is it that he won or is it how he won?
Yes and yes. I will say, maybe it's like if Austin Peay didn't know they were going to play Alabama right now and were told Friday morning they had to go to Tuscaloosa and play Alabama. And then the next day beat Alabama.
They're playing Alabama.
They are playing
you said
Alabama.
Texas.
No, I said Alabama.
Okay, I heard Texas for some reason.
That's because you just have Texas on the brain.
Well, we have it recorded, so we'll find out. But I always like have Texas on the brain. But I do think maybe Austin Peay beating Alabama would be more than 20 to 1. But I don't even that would be such a big dog that they don't even put it on the board.
Probably so. Here's the other thing. So for Austin Peay, that is the last game on their regular season schedule. So I am going to assume that an Austin Peay team that's capable of beating Alabama would also make the FCS playoffs. They would be good enough against the other FCS schools to make the playoff. They would absolutely lose their first game in the FCS playoffs. Like, there would be no sober person in Clarksville, Tennessee until at least the following Friday.
I'm going to do one better. If the governor enough beat to beat Alabama, they're good enough to make the regular playoff. Because most teams that make the playoff aren't good enough to beat Alabama. But I don't know that that's not a. I don't know if that's even remotely hot take.
Well, both it's are, my both, coolest take.
Both would be insane. But in football games, you can live bet.
Yeah.
So like, and I know that the Kentucky Derby is like, what, a minute? But if you could see the odds of that horse winning the race, if you paused it halfway through, the same way it would be like Austin Peay losing to Alabama by 23 in the third, in the second quarter, and then winning.
The replay of the race from the cable cam that's above the horses that showed where he was the entire time and then showed where the runner up was the entire time is insane. You're just watching him. I mean, everything just breaks right open for him. And apparently the leaders were running such a blistering pace that essentially they all ran out of gas.
You know, I went to the Kentucky Derby with my friends 5 years in a row, and I never saw a horse.
Did you see a julep?
I did, and then I saw my face down in the mud by 3 o'clock. But some of the best days of my life were at the Kentucky Derby. And if you live in the Midwest or anywhere where it's within driving distance and you're in their 20s, rent an RV with your friends, get an inflatable pool, use that pool to fill up with beer and ice, put it down on the ground and use it as a peace offering to the beautiful ladies who are walking by you, and have yourself a day.
Aria Wasserman, tarp off at Churchill Downs.
Tarp off everything. Oh, yeah. Wow. I mean, half the time I didn't even make it to the infield. Because the tailgate is so insane outside of the Kentucky Derby, because they set up all these the parking lot for the Louisville football stadium is where you tailgate, and all these buses get dropped off with sorority girls, and everybody just parties in the parking lot, and then everybody walks like a mile and a half to the Derby. And like the Derby, what starts like at 4 o'clock or something local time.
The actual Derby race is the Kentucky Derby is the last race of the day.
And is it at five or six or seven?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. By then, like, you've been drinking since 10 a.m. So like walking through, and it's always blazing hot that day. It's either raining or blazing hot. And sometimes it's just like, I cannot walk 2 miles right now. And you just pass out in the RV.
Horse. Yeah.
When you're in the infield, you don't see the horses anyway.
And how about the call of the race? Rich Strike was not mentioned until it was Rich Strike hits the finish line and wins. That was the first time the horse was mentioned.
I don't know anything about horse racing, but I have read takes online that is the most shocking result to a sporting event in the history of sports.
I mean, it's up there. I felt like it was more shocking than Appalachian State over Michigan.
Well, now, I want to go. I'm curious to go look up the odds of that. What the odds were for that game?
Well, Appalachian State over Michigan, though, it happened over the course of 3 hours, obviously. And the other weird factor with that game was it was the first game broadcast on the Big Ten Network. So you had a lot of people going, "How do I get this?" It actually was the best thing that happened for the Big Ten Network, even though the Big Ten team lost, because you had so many people calling their cable company going, "How do I get this network?"
It's funny because I've looked up some of the odds from some of the biggest upsets in history. Mm-hmm. And the biggest upset in college football history that I can see on this list here was when New Mexico beat Boise State in November of 2015. And the spread was 31 and New Mexico was 55-1.
Wow. Is the App State one, I imagine, was not as big because Appalachian State was coming off an FCS national title. They were pretty good.
Yeah, I'm trying to find it on here. They were 33-point underdogs, so maybe it was something like 50-1.
Maybe.
But so not 80-1. 81 is insane. I don't think people can appreciate. I'm trying to look at some other, even the Portland State beating Washington State in September of 15 was 52.5-1. I'm trying to look at some of the more recent ones. Western Michigan lost to Nicholls State. They were 29-point dogs. I mean, I'm sure there's a few more out there, but 80-1 is nowhere near the odds that you'll find on this list with some of these games. So,
yeah.
It's
I'm
insane.
Just trying to figure out how shocking that really was. And to me, that feels pretty shocking, but it didn't even make a list of the top money line upsets of that 10-year period. So the backyard brawl where Pitt beat West Virginia was a big money line upset.
Oh, I don't know what the odds were, but the biggest money line upset that
was New Mexico and Boise State.
But that was on this list. Here are some other ones. Howard beating UNLV when they were 45.5-point underdogs in 17, I think was 60-1. Stanford beating USC in 07, obviously. They were 40.5-point dogs, and that was 60-1.
Michigan was a 32-point favorite over Appalachian
State. Yeah, so it's somewhere in between 50 and 60, not 80. I'm trying to see some more recent ones. Liberty beat Baylor when they were a 34-point dog in 17. James Madison beat Virginia Tech in 2010. Yep. App State is number 9 on the list here for biggest upsets. Points wise, there were 9 other games ahead of them that had larger spreads.
Wow.
So I think the App State Michigan game is more of a symbolic upset because of the level of playing was different, or the FCS, FBS, all that.
Right.
But it wasn't the biggest point total. So
right. Probably Appalachian State's talent was underrated in that game.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, if you win a national championship at a lower level, like, where does that put you in the higher levels rankings?
So what we're saying though is the Govs have a chance at Bryant Denny come November.
I think you just hexed them, dude. I'm taking the points. I'm telling you that much right now.
Yeah, I don't even know if it's going to be on the board. I don't even know if there's going to be a point spread. You think so?
There was one point spread that was 64 last year that I took, and I won. I think there's a certain point total spread where you just kind of just take it and just hope for the best.
All right, what is your heat check take number 2? Your medium.
These are both pretty hot. I read them.
Goldilocks just right.
They're going to make. I think both of these are pretty warm.
Okay.
When Texas and Oklahoma leave the Big 12, mm-hmm. and if there is no expanded playoff, the committee should view the Big 12 the same way they view Group of 5 programs now, or conferences now.
So, what I think will happen will be that what they did, because they did that when the Big East kind of dissolved and became the American. But the makeup of the American was essentially the makeup of Conference USA 10 years earlier. That's what happened. Because the Big East was a BCS conference. It was, mm-hmm. while we know it wasn't on par with the SEC and the Big Ten, it was viewed that way. And it was codified that way in the BCS contract. But as soon as that part went away, then it was viewed as a group.
And this is a little bit different though, because you have human beings judging. So we saw last year that a Group of 5 team made the playoff for the first time, and the amount of things that Cincinnati had to get right. Not just with what they did on their schedule,
the schedule
was perfect. Yeah. I think that should be the standard for the remainder of the Big 12 teams. If they don't have to play Oklahoma or Texas. And the reason why is because every single Power 5 program, as it currently stands, outside of the Pac-12, but even the Pac-12 to a certain extent has an anchor,
mm-hmm.
and the anchor obviously for the ACC is Clemson. You've got every team in the SEC is an anchor. You've got Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan, and Michigan State. You've got anchors where I would argue that
Wisconsin and sometimes Iowa can be that anchor too. Yeah.
So like the Pac-12 has, you know, symbolic anchors, I guess, with USC and Oregon and sometimes Washington.
Yeah, I mean, Oregon's pretty good right now.
Yeah, and Utah's
pretty good right now.
So if you win the Pac-12, I think you deserve the benefit of the doubt in terms of getting in if you're a one-loss team or better. But I don't know. I think a team from the new Big 12 in 3 years or whatever it is that expands is going to have to be awesome and undefeated to make the playoff, the same way that Cincinnati had to be. Because if you don't beat Oklahoma or Texas to win the conference, then you're not impressive enough to me.
So now I will say, I do think the quality of the new Big 12 is going to be higher than the quality of the American after
it
went from being the Big East to the American. I do think it's a higher quality league and a little deeper league. So I'm not sure they're going to need the stars to align as much as Cincinnati. Like Cincinnati needed Notre Dame to be basically undefeated other than the time they played Cincinnati. So I don't know that you're going to need that. If you're like Oklahoma State, like you don't need to go undefeated. And then also whatever Power 5 team you played out of conference needs to win the conference title. Like, I think you can be undefeated in that league.
Well, I think Oklahoma State's a really good example, because Oklahoma State this past year, if they would have, you know, had one extra yard, would have won the Big 12 and they would have been 12-1, right?
Yes.
And in doing so, what was their one loss this year? They lost to Iowa State on the road by 3, but they beat Texas and Oklahoma. I think that I would have banged the drum for Oklahoma State to get into the playoff as a Big 12 champion, one loss over Cincinnati had they won that game. If they had the same record and the same schedule, but their their wins over Texas and Oklahoma were replaced with wins over UCF and BYU, I don't know that I would believe that they were a playoff team. I think that like beating the anchor teams is a very big, important piece to the equation.
It's interesting that you say that, because on Tuesday, Greg Sankey was speaking in an event, the SEC commissioner, and he said, basically, I don't think everyone heard me, so I'll say it again. The SEC will thrive if it stays at four. And that's him saying the SEC is done trying to give you what you need. The SEC is going to do what the SEC wants at this point, or what is good for the SEC. And it's also him saying he believes the SEC has built a better mousetrap that can survive and thrive.
Is your fantasy coming through where the SEC just splits from the rest of the football?
No, I don't think we're there yet. I really
sounded like it, didn't it?
I think it depends on the Big Ten. You know, the Big Ten's about to do this $1 billion a year TV deal. And if they want to play a different game than the SEC while breaking in the same kind of money as the SEC, I will be surprised. I will be surprised when they all have that much money and that much more money than everybody else, that they don't just act like the SEC at that point.
They might.
I feel like that's human nature. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they will not. Maybe they will say, no, we've been playing this way the whole time. We're not going to use our financial advantage to make, you know, Minnesota better, to make Nebraska better, to make this, you know, Purdue better. But I think they are, because I think you've seen Purdue spend money. You've seen Indiana spend money.
Yeah.
And now that the rules have changed, money can be spent differently. So,
yeah. Okay. So what's your next one?
My next one is in the Big Ten. And this is from talking to Mitch Sherman. And he almost talked me out of this, but I think I'm ready to put this on paper and just say, you know, you can yell at me if I'm wrong, and we'll know that in October or November. Scott Frost will keep his job for 2023. They will improve enough at Nebraska this season for them to feel like the trajectory is where it needs to be, and he will be the coach in 2023.
What does that look like then?
I think it looks like a 7 or 8 win season, a 7 or 8 win regular season. Cause I don't think it has to, like, they don't have to win the Big Ten West. They just need to show improvement. Remember, they've been real bad. And last year they were bad record wise, not terribly bad in the games. They were in all these games. Now, what Mitch pointed out, and he's right, is that even though that result appears fluky, like when you have the same aggregate score on both sides of the equation in Big Ten play, yet you're 1-8. He makes the point that they were awful in specific ways, and that came and bit them in the butt multiple times. For example, special teams definitely cost them the Michigan State game. I don't pin the Iowa loss all on it, but if that block punt doesn't happen, there's a good chance they hang on and win that game. So,
I know, but that's coaching.
Right, and that's why Mitch almost talked me out of it. But I do
Say, well, they're terrible in a specific area and they lost games that they should have won and then not assign that to the
coaching. Well, they're actually addressing
that
specific area. They, for whatever reason, and this Mitch and I talked about, if you want to go back to if you haven't listened to Monday's show with Mitch Sherman, it's really good. Mitch is great talking about Nebraska. We also talk about where Nebraska fits in the grander scheme. But one of the things that Mitch said that I'm not sure the wider world understands about Nebraska the last few years is they were trying to cut corners on special teams. They were trying to use analysts, and that's why they got in trouble, in fact, a couple years ago for using an analyst to coach special teams. When they added the 10th on-field assistant, if you didn't already have a special teams coordinator, it's pretty obvious what you needed to do. Like, why you would not devote significant resources to punt return, kickoff return, field goal block. Like, why you would not devote significant resources to that is beyond me, because it is critically important in terms of field position, in terms of explosive plays, in terms of changing games. So, but they are doing that now. And that's why I think maybe they finally figure it out. And maybe I just don't like to see people get fired.
Can I do a bonus?
Go
quick
for it.
Take. I think it's absolutely insane that college programs don't have a place kicking coach. That is 100% dedicated to working with the place kicker, his footwork, his foot placement, the way he strikes the ball, and analyzing film. Like, I've been to enough college practices in my life to see the kickers off to the side, like completely ignored during practice,
playing
by
cards.
Themselves without anybody overseeing them. And how many times during a college football year are you sitting there with your fingernails being bitten because you're so worried about a kick going in or out and there was nobody there to coach them? It's like, with all the money and the resources and the analysts and all the things that are spent winning football games, we all know that punting and kicking, to even a bigger extent probably, can win you or lose you a national title, and they don't have personalized kicking instructors for the place kickers on the team, I think is borderline insane.
Well, I don't know that you would hire one just for the place kicker, but you could hire one to coach the place kicker and the punter.
There's a Coles kicking camp that is designed to help high schoolers get scholarship offers as place kickers, long snappers, and punters.
Right.
The coaches at that camp working with high schoolers have more kicking expertise than anybody that's in the building.
Yeah, my guy Brandon Kornblue kicked at Michigan, and he coaches kickers. Yeah.
How can a college program not have one expert in the building that knows exactly how to coach a kicker?
Well, some of them do, and some of them are analysts, and they're not really supposed to be coaching on the field. But yeah, you should. I would, and the thing is, like, if you were a kicker at a decent level, you probably did kick and punt in high school, at least in high school. And I would, not everybody's Pat McAfee, where you were the place kicker and the punter in college, but there is a group of people who probably could coach place kickers and punters, because you don't have to have played all of it at a high level. You played one of them at a high level and you did the other one. You can coach the other one. And I think that would be helpful.
I don't know if you know this about me, but
I think punting is a massive weapon. I think me and Kirk Ferentz love punting.
Yeah. My cousin Kyle, who I grew up with, that is my age and is one of the closest people to me in my life, was a kicker in high school. And his dad spent an inordinate amount of money flying him to camps and kicking camps and punting camps, and he got a walk-on spot on Ohio U's football team. And from what I understand, he was basically ignored when he got to school from a coaching standpoint.
Right.
And he was a tremendous punter and kicker, especially at the high school level, because he was training at it every single day and going to camps and getting instructions from personal kicking coaches. I think a Gramatica brother helped him. Like, I mean, like, he actually, like, put a lot into it. And I remember just being baffled by that. Like, you put all this time, money, and resources into finding a kicker at the college level, and if you need a good punt or you need a good kick, you're sending somebody out there who's basically been doing their own take-home tests.
I just remember, because as a very undersized offensive lineman, I worked out with the long snappers. And I would ask them, like, what do y'all do every day at practice?
Yeah, what do they do all day?
And they're like, well, we do this, and we do this, and then we go here. And
but
we
they do
that.
Their own practices?
Yeah. Yeah, they're basically
– That is not insane
needed.
To you?
Oh, yeah. It is. But what you'll see if you try to add another coach is the FCS schools and the group of five. We can't afford it. Can't afford it.
What was the Michigan-Michigan State game? I guess that was a blocking problem.
Right.
But if
those
you had
guys,
if
those guys had have a, multiple coaches.
But if you had a punting coach, he might not have – fumbled the ball away the way he did. I don't know. I think that if I had a kicker who was coming onto the field for a 29-yard field goal in the snow, right, because we love bad weather, I would be more comfortable as a football coach of a program knowing that that guy's been working at it with a specialist every single day, but the way a quarterback does with his throwing.
All right, Ned, we'll get – I know we've got a few more to get to, but I want to get a little more in the weeds on this. How are you going to – okay.
There's no such thing as a baby take, is there?
No, one of your 10 is a kicker punter coach. So what are the other 9?
Okay. So I don't know. I don't know how I would break this down. This is an interesting question. I think that you would need a quarterback coach, an offensive coordinator.
But the OC can coach a position on offense. So you can double him up. He can coach QBs. He can coach offensive line. He can coach receivers, tight ends, whatever you want.
And it's usually the quarterbacks that they do?
A lot of times, but you have like Jeff Grimes was an offensive line coach by trade. He's now the offensive coordinator at Baylor, but he works with the tight ends, and he's the OC.
I've seen programs, and I don't know if I'm going to get this breakdown correct because what do I know? But I've seen coaches that have like inside linebackers only.
Yes.
Or
yes.
Or I would not have that, and I would have a kicking coach.
Yeah, or sometimes they'll split up the O-line and tight ends with a tight ends and tackles coach and a guards and centers coach.
Yeah, I don't think I would do any of that. I think I would just have an OC who would probably be the quarterback coach.
Okay.
Because I want the OC to know exactly what my quarterback's tendencies, susceptibilities
are. Okay, so that's one.
That's one. An offensive line coach, a receivers coach, a running back coach.
Four.
And I don't know how I feel about a tight ends coach.
Tight ends coach, a lot of times
tight ends coach run game coordinator.
Well, a lot of times tight ends coaches are also your special teams coordinator.
Yeah, tight ends, special teams then. Is that five?
That's five. So let's go to defense now. You got
defensive line coach.
Okay.
Linebacker coach. I've got four spot. I've got two left now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how if I would want to break up the secondary.
You could do safeties and corners, or you could do outside line. I would go outside linebackers, inside linebackers. If you have a four line, if it's either four linebackers or if you base out of a nickel.
But can one secondary coach do an adequate job coaching all the safeties and all the corners?
Well, that's the thing. If you base out of a nickel and you have an outside linebackers coach that works with your kind of hybrid guy, your star,
then that kind of like helps you with that.
Yeah, it's like a nickel slash small outside linebacker. Yeah, you can do it. I think it could work. I do think you could have an effective coaching staff if you devoted one spot to a kicker punter coach, because everybody else had nine assistants all along. Also, your head coach may specialize in a position. If they're a hands-on type head coach, like Nick Saban is basically the assistant DBs coach at every Alabama practice.
Yeah. I guess I don't think I'd want to break up the linebackers into two.
It just depends on, like, if you're a like a 4-3 or a 3-3-5, you might not. You may want to have them all together, and you may want to split your secondary coach. If like you're 3-3-5, you may want to split your secondary coaches up and have a safeties coach and corners.
Would you put a spot on your staff for a kicking coach?
I think it's a good idea. If that person is capable, I would want to make sure.
Hashtag college kickers.
Yeah, I want to make sure they're capable of working with the kickers and the punters.
Yeah, it would be both.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a really
maybe
smart
even
idea.
Peppers too.
Because that's you know what that is? You know what kickers and punters are? Points and yards.
Yeah, I know. It's insane.
Yeah. All right. So we've solved.
I don't think there's a single program that I've heard of that has one.
I was gonna say, some coaches have kicked before, like Steve Spurrier was the long distance field goal kicker when he played at Florida. He famously kicked a very long field goal against Auburn his senior year. The kick basically won him the Heisman, even though he was a quarterback. Because it was like, oh, he's also a kicker. And he did that. So, yeah, there are not a lot of people who have done that. There are not a lot of punters who became – there's a few – I believe Jeff Banks at Texas is a former, is he a punter or a kicker? I can't remember.
He was a punter.
He was a punter who is a special teams coach. So
yeah, but special teams coach and kicker coach would be different.
It's the same. If you've punted at a high level, you could be the kicker coach.
I guess you could be the special teams coordinator should be an expert on place kicking and punting.
Well, because here's the thing. If you're the special teams coordinator, so you run the special teams meeting, which is most of the team, it's basically everybody but the offensive lineman. You run punt, return, punt, kickoff, return, and kickoff at practice. And then the rest of the time, while the offensive line coach is working the offensive line and the linebackers coach is working the linebackers, you would be working with the kickers and the punters and the snappers. That's
perfect.
Yeah. That's
you solved
it. You got to find that person. There's not a lot of qualified people for that. So that's who you got to find. All right. My next take. You ready?
It's my turn.
Oh, shoot. Oh,
you can go first. It's your show.
I forgot you added one.
You go first. Go ahead.
All right. My hottest take.
Okay.
And this has sort of been trickling out here the last few days, and it's not definitive by any stretch, but I'm making it definitive now because I wanted to have a scorching take in this podcast. Arch Manning will be a Florida Gator.
Well, you can elaborate.
So there have been rumors that he's
on the day that he gets a crystal ball to Texas,
thinking about Billy Napier and company.
Oh, yeah. I wrote that in the story I wrote about him.
Exactly. Exactly. I read your stories. So okay. If Texas has a good season, sure. But if Texas isn't doing so well, let's say Texas has a similar season to last year, does he want to climb on board there?
I think that recruits are sold on fixing problems.
You can be the one to fix this.
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know that I buy into if team isn't very good next year, the good player doesn't want to go there anymore. The thing that I think would cause him,
because if they go 5-7 again, do you think Sark is safe?
Well, if they go 5-7 again, then it'll be dysfunctional, which I think is different than not being very good.
Okay.
And I think dysfunctional would be a turnoff.
So that would give Billy Napier and company a chance.
Yes, but he's also like the second place team right now is Georgia.
What do they do?
They don't do anything.
I got the impression from the original lists that Arch didn't want to be like another cog in the wheel. Like he didn't want to be the guy who just went to the place that just steamrolls everybody. That he wanted to be like you, like the same reasoning he would go to Texas, like the one who kind of lifts it out of the morass.
I think if you went another way with it, it would be even more interesting. What if my dreams come true and Quinn Ewers is just awesome and Texas wins 10 games next year? Does that make them less attractive?
Okay, so Quinn Ewers. All right, now here's a question. This is very kind of regulatory. Because he reclassified, did his clock for the NFL start last year?
I think it did, yes.
Okay, so if Quinn Ewers is awesome, I don't think 1 year of an awesome Quinn Ewers, I mean, you're sitting behind an awesome Quinn Ewers is the worst thing. Just like I wouldn't think 1 year of sitting behind an awesome Anthony Richardson.
You know, now that you mention it, I'm not sure. Isn't the rule 3 years out of high school?
3 years, 3 years since your class graduated from high school. But I guess that's his class.
I don't
class
know how that applies. I mean, he is in the class of 21, right?
Yeah. Well, and also, do we know if Quinn Ewers did the Southern football middle school redshirt?
I don't know the answer to that. I honestly don't know what his NFL rule is.
That's like when JT Daniels reclassified to go to USC a year earlier than expected, he was the same age as that graduating class because he had done that thing. So Quinn Ewers is currently 19. He just turned 19. So he's pretty much the age of a freshman.
My understanding is that he can go to the NFL after.
Yeah, he went to Ohio State at 18 years old. He turned 18 the March before he went to Ohio State.
Then I think so that's
the same age as most of his graduating class. So yeah. Yes. So I don't think a year of a great Quinn Ewers that Arch Manning would have to sit behind. I don't think
it's
that
not
would
just
be
about sitting about him. It's about sitting behind him. It's also about being the guy who fixes things. And then if Quinn Ewers does awesome, then he's not the guy
he's already.
And this is just speculation.
But you could say that, okay, well, Georgia's already fixed, so they don't need fixing. Mm-hmm. So that wouldn't be an issue either. Florida, if Anthony Richardson.
Can he just go
awesome,
to Ole Miss
be
and
gone.
be awesome at it?
I just don't know. Does he want to do that? Does he want to?
Clearly not.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that he wants to be where his dad was or where his uncle was or, so Tennessee would be the same thing with Peyton there. Maybe
just
he
go to Arizona.
There you go. Blaze your own trail. Blaze it to Tucson.
I just drove through Tucson on my way back from my wedding, and I miss it there. It's nice.
Did you grab a Sonoran dog?
I did not. And that's the perfect segue into my take. That's
okay,
not football related, but I
go
want,
for it.
Put a pin in it for Sonoran dogs.
Okay.
My last take is Ohio State is the most underachieving program in college football.
Not as long as the University of Texas still stands.
Based on resources and what they've brought into the program, it is remarkable to me that they're going on almost 10 years without winning a national title and missing the playoff half the time. Like, I don't know if you can name a team that has as much going for it that has been so remarkably short all the time.
Let me ask you this one. The 2017 team and the 2018 team, both of which missed the playoff. If they play in the SEC, does one of those two make the playoff?
I think that
with similar results.
Those were the teams that got beat by Purdue and Iowa.
Iowa the first year, Purdue the second. Yeah.
I don't know why that. Why would that help?
I think the year they lose to Iowa, maybe it's different because
they got their doors blown off in both of those games. So
I know they did,
and I think that those games also play a big role in what I'm saying.
Well, and so I'm trying to play out the analogy. So if they were in the SEC, the losing by three touchdowns on the road to Iowa would be losing by three touchdowns on the road to
a good Arkansas team?
Yeah, good Arkansas team or Mississippi State.
Yeah.
And then the Purdue one would be like getting blown out at Ole Miss.
Right. I actually think Ole Miss would be more understandable because they're awesome offensively.
Right. Or maybe it would be like getting blown out by Tennessee, Kentucky.
I think Kentucky is probably – no, because Kentucky's good. Now, who's the Purdue of the SEC?
Kentucky's like Iowa.
I think I think that Kentucky was a better comparison for Iowa than it was.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
So I think we should assign Kentucky –
to the Iowa spot.
To the Iowa squad. How about South Carolina for Purdue?
I think that sometimes they play great and can do some things that amaze you. But
South Carolina's had
just
some big upsets too. But sometimes they're just horrid.
Yeah, I think that works. You're right. Because I always go back to Nick Saban on with Scott Van Pelt in 2017, the night of the conference championship game. So Alabama didn't play in one because it was Georgia Auburn. And Nick Saban is going, and he's referring to Ohio State, if we'd lost by three touchdowns on the road, you wouldn't be talking to me tonight.
Yeah, no, it was correct they didn't make it. I think not making it's the problem. And then also, if you go back and look at the history of Ohio State football back to even 2000, but it doesn't even really matter. Just go to the beginning of the Urban Meyer era. The best teams they had didn't even make the playoff. Or if they did, they lost. Like, all of their best teams didn't win it. So it's just like, to me, it's like when you look at the way that team has recruited over the course of the past decade, and then you match it with the results, they are much more. I mean, and like the thing that's so crazy is that their NFL draft numbers are insanely good.
Yes.
And the players coming in are very good.
Yeah.
Conference games. How is it possible that a team that's had that much talent coming in and that much talent going out not make the playoff half the time? Their best team of the last 10 years loses in the first round of the playoff, and then they get their doors blown off the only other time they play for a national title. It's just like, what's going on there?
This is an interesting thing. I have a hard time saying they've underachieved. I just do, because they keep getting, it's just like I said with Georgia before last year, you keep getting bites at the apple, you break through. And obviously Ohio State has won a national title in the playoff era.
Dude, it's been almost 10 years.
It's been 8 years. I know. And that, you know, some of it's luck. Like, that 2019 Ohio State team was awesome. They lose to Clemson in a controversial Fiesta Bowl, but it wouldn't have mattered because whoever played LSU was going to lose. But any other year, there's not that LSU team. And that 2019 Ohio State would have been one of the best teams in the country, clearly.
But it's been a consistent thing for the last 20 years with that program.
I don't know. I just have a hard time saying that
because they've done so well in every other facet.
You can't possibly think about it that way. Showing back up there that you're doing fine. Once you get to that level, once you are in that echelon, sometimes it comes down to luck, bounces,
sure,
all this other
stuff. I agree. But 10 years almost is a long time.
Okay, that's a hot take. I will give you that one.
Yeah, it's not like they're the worst team. I'm just saying with what they have, they've achieved the least.
Buckeye Nation's not going to be thrilled with you. I but what is well,
I think that people who love Ohio State would probably look in the mirror and agree with me.
I think the hypercritical people on the message boards, yes, they will agree with you. Now, they're not going to like you saying it because you're not one of them, but they will probably agree with it. You're right.
Yeah, maybe
Yes.
it's a hot take.
It's
I just would have
just
expected
hard to
more.
say. Like,
You were
I
at the
don't know.
14 national title game, right?
Yeah.
I remember talking to you there.
Yeah.
If I would have told you Ohio State will only play for one more national title in the next 8 years and never win another one after what happened that night, what would you have said?
I would have said you're crazy because they were going to win it the next year. No questions.
And then if I said
No
if they
questions
missed the
asked.
playoff half the time, they've missed the playoff 4 times since then.
I also would have said you were crazy.
And there's been no drop off whatsoever in recruiting.
Nope. The talent scene and talent and development, because they're still
Yeah.
sending them to the NFL at the same
That
rate,
three
too.
receivers that were on their roster get taken back to back to back in the first round this year.
Right.
And
It's
they keep
interesting.
coming up short on the field.
It's shocking when you say it, but the more you think about it,
I'm not
it's
trying to be a
not.
hot take artist here. I mean, just think about what has occurred there.
Yeah.
And like the other thing too is you look at just last year's team specifically. Name one defensive playmaker on that team.
Yeah,
Like, how
well,
could you possibly recruit the way that they've recruited the last 5 years and not have a single identifiable recruiting, I mean, a defensive weapon?
now is that a sign of the recruiting falling off or the development falling off?
Maybe.
Obviously, they made a change at defensive coordinator, so we're gonna find out.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, maybe. And I think they're in a very critical spot right now, too.
Now, Jim
Like,
Knowles took a group at Oklahoma State. How many of those guys got drafted? How many of those defenders got drafted? It wasn't many.
No, I think it was two.
Yeah. Now they were old. They were very old. They were very experienced. He's definitely working with more talent here. So if he comes in and just fixes it immediately,
Mean,
then
it's
you
not
know it was
hopeless. They could go
developed.
win the national title this year, and I look like a
They
moron.
could.
Like, I'm
They
not
could.
saying that they're not a good football team. I'm saying they've been so good for so long, and they've not achieved anything on the field, and it's staggering to me. And I think that
Not that
we
they haven't
lose.
achieved
I
anything. I
also
mean,
think
they've
that
won Big
Georgia
Ten
probably would
titles.
have been the answer to that in December. Like if I said the most underachieving team at that echelon, it's just hard to put yourself in that mind frame because when a team recruits as well as they have done and have won a playoff game in the recent past, you can't accept that. But when you really boil it down and think about the 8 year run that they've had since they won the national title, starting off with the best team in maybe college football history, not even making the playoff the following year, they haven't done anything in 8 years.
You heard him, Ryan Day. Get to work.
He knows.
I know he knows.
Yeah.
All right. Non-football takes. I don't know if this is as much a hot take as I just want people who have done this to nod their heads and sympathize, because this is gonna be life for the next week or so. You've heard me talk about removing wallpaper on this show and how incredibly frustrating an
A
experience
little
that
piece
is.
of our wallpaper came off, and it's really bothering me.
Yeah,
Like
because you.
you can see it's kind of starting to detach a little bit, and you can't just go up and pat it because then it'll get wrinkled, and
Well,
it's actually
you did the
irritating
roll,
me.
yeah, the
I
kind
didn't
of
do anything.
stick
We
on
paid
and
somebody.
yeah, I know. You paid somebody to put on stick-on wallpaper. This is more about you than
And they
anything
didn't
else.
do a great job.
Yeah. So real wallpaper though is a pain in the ass to get off. But you know what's more of a pain in the ass to take off? Tile. We began the demolition of our backsplash in the kitchen tonight. Well, my wife did. Well, she got home from work. I was taking
Why
the
are
kids
you
to their
doing
various
this?
things. What's that?
Why do you do this stuff to yourself?
Because the backsplash is hideous. The rest of the
I'm not
house.
saying don't remodel it. I'm asking you why you're removing tile with your bare
Okay.
hands.
So a kitchen backsplash is not a big enough job for someone who does that sort of thing right now to break away from the much larger jobs that they're doing building houses. Like they're probably contracted with a builder who's putting up eight houses right now. And so they're doing eight backsplashes
You
and
can't
all
find a single
the
person to
tile work
take
in the
your
bathroom.
backsplash down?
Not
Are
for
you
a
going to put the
reasonable
tiles in
price.
after?
Yes, we are going to put the tiles on too. So my brother-in-law has done a lot of tile work in his life. He's coming up, he's going to bring the wet saw. He's going to show us how it's done, and we're going to all do it. And
I'm 4 states over and I'm anxious to thinking about it.
it's going to look awesome.
I bet it will, but it's going to be a miserable few days for you.
The taking of off of the tile is going to be miserable. I feel like once – now, we already worked on a little bit of drywall patching in another project that we just did, and we feel pretty confident with that. So that part I'm not terribly worried about. It's just getting all this crap off, and it's just you got your hammer and your little chisel thingy, and you just go at it, and it is maddening. It's absolutely maddening and dirty and dusty. Like, the whole kitchen is just covered in dust now.
I've never done that before, and I already know that it would be terrible.
So, yeah. So I am – but I'll be very glad when it's done that we did it and that we'll know, because eventually we're going to do the bathroom too.
Well, you'll have to do some before and after pics. I'm very curious to know what kind of tile did you go with.
So it's going to be a white – not necessarily a white subway tile, because – that kind of smoothness wouldn't really fit in with the cabinet color and the countertops. So it's going to be more of a kind of stone looking white tile, rectangular. The tile that's in there now is like this alternating brown, gray, and blue. It's ugly. It's the one part of that area that I don't like. Everything else in that kitchen is not, the cabinets are really nice. The countertops are nice, but this backsplash brings the whole thing down, darkens the whole area. So this will make it bigger. It'll make it brighter and look bigger.
I feel like you've done a lot of home renovating. Didn't you recently do a pool?
Mm-hmm. I didn't. Now somebody else did that. That's no, I know. Way but, beyond
well, you got like $300,000 of equity in that place, or what? I mean, you're just rolling in dough over there.
We are not. But
no, Mr. Home improvement. I mean, you're at least those are things that will pay off for you.
Oh, yes, life. Yes. Yeah. And we will save a lot on this tile project versus what we'd have to pay, because again, the folks who are doing that work are charging a premium right now, because they could be doing this for a builder and doing multiple projects at once and just knocking them out. So this is
just be careful with the house, because I think there's nothing worse in the world than when people get tattoos and do shoddy work.
Right.
It's like you just got this thing permanently applied onto your body. Why does it look like Edward Scissorhands did it?
No regrets.
Like, yeah, just yeah. Like, or have you ever just seen like some people's tattoos in public and it looks like an 8-year-old drew it?
Yeah, those people were probably in prison when that got done.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've seen some really I've one of my best friends in the entire world, and I'm gonna make fun of him right now, but he has a tattoo on his back that says only the dead have seen the end of war. And he went to Iraq, and he's like a veteran. Like, I mean, makes sense.
Okay. That's
okay. And I understand why he would write that, because he actually lived that truth.
Okay.
But then on his bicep, it says death is just the beginning, which is conflicting with what he said on his back, and beginning is spelled wrong. And I'm just thinking to myself, like, you have to it says beginning. There's one N. Death is just the beginning with one N on the end. And I guess he was having he's having a crazy night in Newport Beach or something. He wasn't lucid during the time, and he'll joke about it. But it's like the movie Forgetting Sarah Marshall. It's like, this is Hindu. This is gibberish. This is that. These are all conflicting ideologies. This means you're full of shit. It's like, if you're gonna put stuff on your body, like, just think about it, you know. And I don't know how I went on this tangent.
Well, spell it right. That's spell it no, right. I know it, how you went on this. Because I will tell you.
Don't mess up your kitchen, bro.
Yeah, removing tile. Is probably my wife actually does remove tattoos for a living at work. They laser.
Okay. So, I might have to get her business card.
Yeah. You got a tramp stamp?
Oh. No. I'm going to get it to my buddy. Actually, one of my best friends, my other best friend, has my name tattooed on his body in two places. He's got my initials on his bicep, and on the back of his left leg, it says, "Don't get cute with the dice, Gladys." And it says dash Ari Wasserman, full tattoo. My name is on his thigh.
Why? I mean,
we were in Vegas and we were playing craps, and I was 25 and I was not sober. And we had a lot of money out there, probably more than I could afford to lose at the time. And my personal pet peeve, and these aren't even my takes, Andy, but this is why you have me on the show, right? So
yes.
I hate when you're playing craps and the person who's throwing the dice blows on them. I don't like it. I don't know why people do it. I don't know why.
It's nasty, and it doesn't really change what you're going to roll.
It doesn't. It's not. It's just all you're doing is holding everybody up, and we want you to roll the dice. So belligerent, Ari yells across the table, "Don't get cute with the dice, Gladys." I don't know why I called him Gladys. It was the first old lady name that came to my mind. My friend thought that was the funniest thing in the entire world. And then a week later had it tattooed on the back of his leg. And I'll send you a picture of it.
Was he also drunk when he got it tattooed on his leg?
That guy's got a lot of tattoos. So like, okay. I don't know. I think he put it in a place where he knew people wouldn't see it.
He was just adding to the pastiche and wanted to make sure that you were given proper credit. He has tremendous
work. Like his arms, like the work that he has in his arms. Like, I'm not a tattoo person, but like he spent the money. He's got a mural of his parents' faces on it and it looks just like them.
I'm very jealous when I see the person with the sleeve. And they've clearly put a lot of thought into it and gone to a real artist.
Who was an artist? Yeah. If you're gonna do that, pay the money and do it right. So the reason why we're talking about this is if you are going to do something to your home by yourself because there isn't labor or you want to save money, I appreciate that. But you're in that kitchen every day, and the kitchen is the number one sales piece, right?
For any home.
You're going to kill it, right?
I'll send you some pictures of what my brother-in-law did in his own kitchen, his own bathroom, and his outdoor kitchen.
I can't even hang a mirror. So when you start talking about black splashes, like I get hives. So no, you have to, and I trust you. You've never steered me wrong.
No, I've got someone coming in who is very good at attaching tile to a vertical wall. So I'm not worried about it. It's going to look great. It's going to look better probably than if we'd hired someone who for them, it's just another
you
job.
Don't need my advice. You get it. I just, as your friend, I felt more comfortable.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You don't listen. Bad tile work is like a bad tattoo because it is a pain in the ass to get fixed. So, and just ask my wife who has had to laser some people. Yes.
Check your phone in a second. Cause I sent you the tattoo and maybe we can put it out with the promo tomorrow, but you're going to laugh. And
your name's spelled right. That's the best part.
He spelled my name correctly, but that is on my friend's. That's the person who married us. This is the person who introduced me to Britt.
Wow.
So
now is there a reason that the five is showing on the die?
I don't know. There's a reason. I don't remember what it was off the top of my head.
Wow. So
I think that there's another quote on his other leg, and I think it's a two.
I really hope that at some point in my life, I say something profound enough that someone will tattoo it on a part of their body.
I don't know that
ass.
It was profound. I just think we were 20 and dumb, but maybe I wanted to prove to you that I'm not full of crap. Okay.
All right.
So you ready for my last take as this podcast goes off the rails? Bacon is overused. It tastes good. It just doesn't have to be in everything.
I will agree with you. If you'd said bacon is overrated, I would have left this podcast, driven to the airport, flown to Dallas, and fought you. But
I think bacon is great.
Bacon is overused is not necessarily a hot take. Like chocolate dipped bacon doesn't need to appear in every mixed drink.
It doesn't have to be on every sandwich I order everywhere.
It kind of does.
I'm the type of person that will, and I ate a grilled cheese with you.
The other night, you had the bacon taken off.
Mm. And you thought that was odd.
I had bacon on. It was delicious.
Bacon. It doesn't have to be on my sandwich. When I order a cheeseburger, if it comes with bacon, I take the bacon off. I like it with breakfast. I like it in other certain areas. I don't know. I don't want it on because it overpowers the taste of everything. I don't want it on my pizza. I don't want it in calzones. I don't want to taste bacon every time I'm eating other things.
See, I think it provides it doesn't overpower pizza or a burger or a grilled cheese. Where I don't like it is the stunt bacon. Putting the bacon in the thing that doesn't usually have any bacon.
Yeah, there's a buddy bacon of mine owns a donut shop and they have bacon on the donut. And I'm like, I would not want to eat that.
I've eaten it. It's okay, but if I'm eating a donut, I don't need anything that savory with my donuts.
Do you need bacon on your pizza, though, dude?
I enjoy bacon on my pizza. It's delicious.
I just like, it's a breakfast flavor to me.
See, I don't discriminate like that. All the good flavors are good any time of the day.
Yeah.
And I would also eat breakfast any time of the day.
I also order my breakfast sandwiches, which you also saw in Arizona, with egg and cheese only. I like them plain. And I like bacon on the side.
But you do have the bacon. You just don't want them in your sandwich.
That's right.
What is it? Maybe it's something about bacon and bread that you don't like.
I don't know. I don't know what it is. It just isn't. And it's not that if it were in it, I would still eat it. It's not like I dislike it.
Right. But I
find it to be more satisfying, like a breakfast sandwich. And Bill Landis thinks I'm crazy because he's a big purveyor of breakfast meat. But so whenever I order.
The only time you like bacon, plain strips of bacon at breakfast.
That's my preferred time to eat it. Yes.
See, my preferred time to eat it is all the time. Like, if you handed me a plate of bacon,
it's overused. I don't need to have it all the time. It's good, but it's good at breakfast. And if it disappeared from Earth for every other meal, I'd
prefer it all the time. Like, if I have the option, I will take it.
But like, I view cheese like that. I want cheese on everything all the time.
Sure.
Who doesn't? I don't think bacon is cheese. Bacon is very as a special.
It's better than cheese.
I disagree. If you had to pick what would be removed from this earth that you could live with, you'll never be able to eat cheese in any form again, or you'll never be able to eat bacon again. You would take bacon over cheese? You would sorely mistake. That's a huge mistake.
No. I wouldn't do that because that would ruin pizza.
It would ruin everything. If bacon disappeared from earth, I would be fine.
The beauty of it is they both exist. And so given the chance to have them both together, I will always take that chance.
I know, but it's not cheese. Like, I don't know why we've made it into cheese where it has to be present in every...
It doesn't have to be, but if it's
available... It is on every menu. It's always there.
As an option.
I mean, most of the time... It wasn't an option. I had to remove it from my sandwich the other night. It's like that on all these menus.
Man, you were nuts. That bacon was perfect.
I'm sure you enjoyed it. I'm not... And if they would have...
Dunking that tomato soup. Oh.
Let me be clear. If my sandwich was made with the bacon, I wouldn't not eat it. I don't dislike it. I dislike having to dance around it all the time because it's present on every menu, on every menu item when it doesn't belong on it.
It just doesn't bother me.
And I'm sure most people agree with you, but I wanted to have a non-football take that would get some people riled up. And the beauty of this is that I truly believe it, and you've seen it in person.
Yes.
I'm not messing around. Two times when we ate meals last week, I had to remove bacon from my sandwich.
You're a man of great passion. I appreciate that, Art.
And I'm real.
You're wrong on this, but I appreciate it.
I could be wrong. I'm honest about how I feel.
Glad. The courage of your convictions is what matters to me, not the fact that you're wrong.
I'm very scared for this podcast to go on the internet, by the way, because I think people are going to get more mad at me. Like, of all the takes that I spewed
out, usual?
I think more people are going to be mad about bacon than anything I said about
football. No, I'll tell you what. Everybody who's listening to this right now, if you have not given us a review, please give us a review. I hope you give us a 5-star review, but even a 4-star or 3-star would help. We've got a counterbalance. There's one review that your Stars Matter co-host, Mitch Light, has helped us get. It's a 1-star review, and the person wrote in all caps complaining that Mitch Light does not use a pop filter on his microphone. That he's popping his
feet. I sent him that. Yes.
Yes. It is the angriest review, because we have several 1-star reviews from people who don't like some of the things we've said. And listen, in this line of work, it happens. But it's the angriest review we've gotten. So we need to counterbalance that. So by all means,
can I say something about the 1-star review?
Sure.
If something that we said made somebody angry, that's fine. Like, you're not supposed to agree with everything that we say or the tone of everything that we say. But it doesn't mean the podcast sucks. It just means that you didn't appreciate that comment.
They can think whatever they want, Ari. That's the beauty of being the consumer.
I know, but
if they want to give us a 1-star review, that's fine.
You think our podcast is a 1-star. And it's like, I disagree with things you say all the time. I still think that you're a 5-star personality. Like, I don't know why that's the response. Like, we showed them, you know?
No, it's fine. Again, not everything is for everybody. And if
I don't like 1-star
turn on a microphone and talk into it, someone's going to disagree with you. It's okay. But I
think being disagreed with is healthy. I think saying that the podcast sucks because you disagreed with something is not nice.
But what we need is the silent majority to speak up. So hammer those 5-star reviews, and we're going to take the pee popping complaint right out of there. We're going to even it out. We're going to turn it into like a 4.9 average. By the way, my favorite part of that is it's updated. So there was an original complaint, and my guess is it's been lengthened. to complain more about the popping of the peas by Mitch Light.
It happened again.
He said if you look at it now, it's the review says updated in parentheses. It's tremendous.
I'm gonna have to get with Mitch on that because I actually told him to fix that.
The level of passion that this guy has for the popping of the peas, and I hope I'm not doing it now.
Dude, this is really angry.
Yeah.
I'm reading it. It's all caps. For the love of God, this is one too many episodes in which your mic has no pop filter. How has no one corrected this? Go to the local music shop and buy a $20 pop filter. I can't listen to another episode of Quarterback. I feel for the guy.
Listen.
Oh, update. Here's the update.
Oh, okay.
421. Mitch's mic is perfect now. I hope this is a permanent update. But he didn't update the
review. It's still a one-star review.
Bullshit.
What?
I wish that we could respond to these guys. Gainesville, well, Yak. He's in your city, bro.
I'm going to respond to him now. Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers. Did Peter Piper pick a peck of pickled peppers? If Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers, where's the peck of pickled peppers that Peter Piper picked?
Peter Piper pizza is the pizza people pick. Was the number one commercial when I was a kid in Phoenix.
Update that review.
He's in Gainesville.
Fine. We can
Gainesville,
we can hash
yeah.
it out in person.
Okay.
We can hash it out in person. Thank you so much for listening. It's been a lot of fun. On Wednesday's show.
Impeccable day.
Impeccable, yes. On Wednesday's show, Brody Miller, the Athletics LSU beat writer, will talk Brian Kelly, the new adjustment to the new school, the family, and everything. We'll talk fit, why that doesn't matter, and why winning matters. And on Thursday, Ari with Stars Matter. And on Friday, Ari's going to give you guys some life advice. I think we should all be very, very excited. I'm probably going to tattoo some of it on my calf. Perfectly honest. We'll talk to you later.